This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. Rhonda Meadows. Dr. Meadows is the Chief of Population Health. We're going to talk about her journey to that position, COVID-19, and what we can expect in population health. Dr. Meadows, before we get started, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Thank you, Scott. I really appreciate this opportunity. My name is Rhonda Meadows, and I am a family physician. I am also the president of Population Health for Providence, the 7-state health system that extends from Alaska to Texas. I also have the privilege of being the CEO for Ion Health Solutions, our population health management company. Our division has been up and running since 2015, and we feel that we have done an enormous job in actually connecting with many, many excellent partners.
So Providence Healthcare is one of the great systems in the country, magnificent faith-based organization led by Rod Hochman, Dr. Hochman, and Mike Butler and team, a magnificent system. What does population health look like at a huge system like that that spans so many different states and areas, and as Providence has also taken a huge leadership in COVID-19, what does population health look like as you lead that?
So, Scott, it's a great question because, as you probably have guessed, population health looks different in each health system and in each physician or medical group as well. For us, the most straightforward way to describe what we do is that population health involves us doing, one, knowing the population, and two, improving their health outcomes. There's a huge body of work underneath both of those big goals, but that is what we try to do. We bridge what we believe is the best in public health and prevention for our communities in all states with healthcare across the care continuum and add to that mix resource management and planning. So that way we actually are not only understanding and again knowing our population, but the efforts that we make to improve health outcomes becomes very real.
Thank you. And in terms of some of those real steps and seeing things in real time, talk to us for a moment about what you've learned through this COVID-19 situation and what you're learning.
So COVID-19 has been teaching us quite a few things and will teach us some more as we go forward. That, in addition to the economic instability and all of the other changes going around us, actually have made us kind of step up even further. A lot of our focus initially when the first case of COVID-19 was noted here in Washington State was focused on the readiness, the safety, and the excellence in care in terms of diagnosis and treatment of individuals. So you heard and read a lot about our clinicians, our hospitals, our nursing homes, the efforts that we made to expand telehealth and telepsych services. As well as the use of all kinds of digital health to enhance and expand our outreach at a time when most of us were being instructed to stay home, to social distance, and to keep safe. What population health has been doing in the meantime, and kind of lower key, has actually been focusing on understanding where our populations were before the COVID pandemic began, and then how they have changed since. So we have done the work of actually assessing where the health disparities have worsened and then done the work of figuring out how we need to get upstream ahead of them to try to prevent these same problems and the same terrible consequences with this next wave of infection coming.
In these health disparities, particularly impactful in minority communities and in elderly communities, it's a sort of age-old problems that are really amplified in this time of a crisis or a pandemic.
Absolutely. But that does not mean that we can't do anything about it, that we can't change the trajectory. So we can't undo decades of health disparities and inequalities. We cannot do that. What we can do is, now that we know who is more adversely impacted, to go ahead and do what I'm going to call is a call to action, and that is get out there and do the outreach and prevention in those communities right now. And I know it may be a little bit uncomfortable during all of the protests and the anger that we have going through our country now over racist facts and hate crimes. but at the same time, that outreach is important. We need to remove barriers to actual testing for at-risk infection. We can anticipate there's been increased transmission with everybody coming together to raise their voice, but it is really important that local testing, particularly locally in the communities of color, that testing for infection occur. It is really important that care access, whether it's in-person or telehealth or digital health services, occur now. That is how we do the work of actually trying to mitigate some of the harm of the virus itself. And then, Scott, later, when we actually have drugs, medications, antivirals that are more effective in actually treating active infections of COVID, we need to make sure that there's equitable sharing and assessment and evaluation of the patients who need them. When vaccines finally become available, we also need to make sure that those at most risk for the greatest disease and death are actually in front of the line to get those vaccines.
And let me ask you a question. You strike me as incredibly both analytical and passionate. So that mix of analytical genius and passion, does this lead being chief of population health to being the dream job?
It is for me. It is the perfect intersection of being who I am. I am a mother of three African-American sons. I am a health physician. I have practiced at Mayo Clinic as well as Kaiser. I have run public health programs in both Florida and Georgia and been a part of CMS at one point as well. And now I'm at Providence, a large health system whose mission is to take care of people, especially the poor and vulnerable. I am right where I need to be.
That is magnificent. Well, that's inspiring. You're going to make me tear up with that. That is magnificent, Dr. Meadows. Talk to us further about how population health will be impacted over the next several years and what it starts to look like.
We've actually started doing some of the changes in population health already, and we expect it only to grow. So we began by looking at our vulnerable populations, Medicaid populations, Medicare populations, in particular with COVID, Medicare, Medicaid dual eligibles. We started looking for our elderly who are in long-term care facilities as well, because you know that they were even more adversely impacted. And when we added in the health disparity work, all of that information comes together in population health informatics and analytics. We combine that information with all of the social determinant factors that we hear so much about. If anything, today with COVID, all of that work becomes amplified. It means that we have to integrate into our interventions and solutions all of that outreach and connection, not just waving at people and shaking a hand, but actually doing the work of actually getting prevention and solutions into shelters, food banks, any place where there are people who are disadvantaged, who need that help. We can't say that we're doing prevention and protection and safety without including all populations, and that is the work that we're doing. The informatics work that we have helps us understand where people live and reside on a regular basis, so we know by zip code where people are. In addition to that work, we can see who's been admitted, who is actually needing emergency room treatment, and who needs a little bit more upstream work in terms of care management, care coordination, care navigation. We can lead people through some of the processes that are currently in place, but we would like to make it much simpler. We've been using telehealth to expand our reach, and that has been a marvelous tool for both traditional medicine as well as telehealth. And telepsych mental health services. So that's been fantastic. The other parts of population health means tracking and understanding utilization, right? If we know where people are going and where they're accessing care, we can actually determine whether or not is that the best place and is that the safest way to do it. That is part of population health.
Let me ask you another question. In the underserved communities, in the poorest communities, is Medicare for all an important part of fixing that, or are they already served by Medicaid? What is, do you have a perception and a thought on that, Dr. Meadows?
You know, I don't know that I have an opinion on Medicare for All, because I honestly, every time I hear it, it has a different description of what it is or what it contains. I'm actually more concerned with people having access to care, regardless of whether or not it's through a government program or some other alternative. You know, when I ran the state Medicaid programs in Florida and Georgia, one of the things that I noticed and one of the things that I finally figured out and got through my thick head was giving people a Medicaid card did not ensure them access to providers, and it certainly did not always ensure them access to good care. It is a start, but so much more needs to be done in order to ensure actually good care and care that they can actually use and will avail themselves to. So there's a reason
right, because even if people have coverage, they still need access, which means you need providers. You need enough providers. You need clinics.
Exactly.
You need all those things to actually provide care beyond just quote unquote insurance coverage. Because if it's insurance coverage, but there's no doctors there or no providers there or no clinics there, or if it's insurance coverage and the doctors won't take it, you haven't really helped. Fascinating. And I didn't mean to put you on the spot. I just think it's in this period of time where there's so much unemployment, there's so many other issues. I'm sort of trying to get a better sense where people's thoughts are on it. And that's the reason I asked the question.
Well, that's okay, because I think it's a fair question. When I think about it, I was like, so do we start a whole new program, or do we build upon the ones that are existing while we're starting a whole new program, which might be a safer bet given the way things are turning out right now. If we did Medicaid expansion with enhanced payment and outreach, if we enhanced and opened up enrollment in the individual exchange market, so we increased subsidies, could we cover more people more immediately? But would that be a faster track while we're figuring out how to actually provide a more global care that everyone can access? And I am purposely avoiding the use of the word universal care, because again, it means different things to different people. My goal, my passion would be to see people actually being able to receive care in their communities in a manner that actually addresses what they need. Probably one of the best things, if you can think of anything good that came out of this whole COVID experience, was the expansion of telehealth services. And I cannot underemphasize that, because it meant that people who could look at their iPhone or their PDA or whatever mobile device they had, they were actually able to access care in the convenience of wherever they were. We moved the dial when we moved over 7,000 primary care physicians into telehealth during a time when everyone was supposed to be working from home. It made people figure out how to do it, and then it also alerted people that this actually works. This is actually comfortable.
And easy way to access your physician without having to go to your physician or vice versa, and so forth. It makes it easier for everybody.
Access your physician, your healthcare professional, we can expand the scope of a lot of health professionals using the telehealth service. And that meant that a lot of people could get their answers, their questions answered. They could access from wherever they were. It was almost a little bit closer to equalizing the access if we could do that in a much more cohesive way. We do have some communities still have issues, right, with broadband, et cetera. But again, it really did expand the reach.
And in a way that's not impossible to do. So it's a huge plus. It's actually practical and doable.
Yeah. Have you experienced telehealth yet? Have you yourself done it?
Well, we have in our family. I'm trying to think if I personally have myself, but certainly my daughter and son have. So, you know, certainly moving in that direction in a hurry, but we have in our family, yes. You know, and will some more.
I got to tell you, I've been championing telehealth for a really long time, but I have to be truthful. It wasn't until recently that I actually tried it for myself as a patient. I've been on the other side, but I have to tell you something. I probably had more direct conversation with my physician through telehealth because I was the only person he was talking with, and I was focused on him. We both had to get over the first initial minutes of being uncomfortable with new tech for us, right? But that was probably the first time I actually saw him laugh and smile in the 5 years that I've known him, okay? So This is telehealth. This was a doctor visit. It was so much better than trying to take off from work, drive across town, wait in the waiting area, and then go and see him, right? And then have him distracted by so many other people. So I feel like I'm probably doing a PSA for telehealth, but I gotta tell you, it's not for everything, but it sure does improve the connectivity that we need with our health professionals.
Well, certainly. I mean, it's almost how urgent care came in 10 years ago, and people immediately said, oh, I don't have to make an appointment. I can just go and get care when I want to get it. This is similar. It just gives you care when you want it, where you want it, great convenience, and so forth. And it's so interesting you say that about connectivity. So as opposed to having your doctor in the room for 3 minutes, well, you're seen by a ton of other providers. Now you're actually on the phone directly with your physician for X period of time. So fascinating. Dr. Meadows, we've got to wrap up. Let me ask you this question. How do people learn more about Dr. Rhonda Meadows? How do they learn more about you? And then we'll also bother you to have you on again in the near future to discuss more topics. Thank you. How do they learn more about you?
They learn more about me by connecting with me through the providence.org website, reaching out to me through LinkedIn. I have been on LinkedIn for a really long time, and so I've collected quite a bit of stories and made quite a bit of friends. Honestly, I kind of welcomed phone calls, emails, text messages, the whole nine yards. I'm pretty available.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today. You were fantastic. What a pleasure to visit with you. Thank you so much.
Stay safe, Scott, and stay healthy.